Hi, Brian.
Hey, John.
Hey, welcome to our first podcast.
Yes, here we are.
I know.
Boomer and X.
Brian, how old are you?
I'm 57.
Okay, and I'm 70, so we must really be bored to go ahead and do this. But
yeah, we had nothing else to do.
Obviously. So I had to ask myself why a podcast, and when we first discussed this, and one of the things, as you know, I just recently retired, and I had I was in education for the last 13 or 14 years, and I was totally disillusioned with our educational system. It's probably one of the few things that I agree with our president on, but and that's definitely a topic for many topics for later.
Okay.
But I was going to write a book on it, and then I started writing the book, and I realized I'm really a shitty writer.
Really?
I'm not a good writer. I mean, I can, you know, I can, you know, write a sentence, but it when I would read what I wrote, you know, the key to being a really good writer is to actually be able to write. And I used to teach this to my kids in education when a few times that I taught at ELA is that writing was thinking with a pencil,
mm-hmm.
you know, and anybody that's able to convey their thoughts directly to a piece of paper, that's a true gift. And I everything gets lost in translation between my head and the piece of paper. So I very rarely am able to convey exactly what I want. So the next best thing is, I thought, well, why not a podcast?
Right.
There is a long philosophical question as to whether there is such a thing as original thought. And at least in my mind, mm-hmm. I've pondered this many times as I've read Aristotle once and Plato twice.
Right,
okay.
Right.
But I don't know. I think everything scaffolds on somebody else's thoughts. And that's and that's where we come up with these ideas. And so you will hear as we go along, it's going to become very apparent to people that I am in recovery and in a 12-step program. So a lot of the stuff that you hear is just me parroting some of that stuff because it's, quite frankly, who I am right now.
Right.
You know, so I wanted to get that out there. And I also want to make sure that in no way am I speaking for the program at all.
Right.
Whatever that program is, and it's not important what it is. And again, I only mention it because my last 37 years have been totally shaped by it. So,
right.
which, you know, what do you think? Is there such a thing as original thought?
I don't think so. I mean, I think original thoughts brought together form original thoughts. So yes and no. I think every original thought comes from a previous thought that someone else had combined with a thought you had, and oh, there's a new thought. It's funny, I've been thinking about that with music a lot lately. And is there any original music? And the answer is no. Like, I'm listening to this podcast. It's a fantastic podcast. This guy, Andrew Hickey, it's called A History of Rock Music in 500 Songs. And he emphasizes again and again, there's no first anything in music. It's all things coming together that were not put together before. Now and then somebody might take that into a sound that you've never heard before, but it still has elements of these past things that have come before it. So I'm kind of using that as a basis for my answer.
Okay. Well, you know, and I don't think it's really that important, that question.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's important that we realize that, you know, I think that's kind of what becomes a megalomaniac, and I'm not going to use any names out there in the public right now, but the idea that we somehow think we're just a little bit smarter than the average guy, not the average guy, but, you know, I guess what I'm really trying to say is there's many things that I have a problem with, mainly because I'm 70, and get off my lawn, by the way, but one of the things is that I don't think people listen anymore to each other. I think everybody has gotten into this kind of mode, and I think it was exacerbated certainly by COVID and definitely by the political atmosphere that's in the country right now, where we go ahead and we write mentally or physically write our narratives, and then we our scripts, and then we try to fit people into it and manipulate and try to get them to say their lines.
Yeah, it's confirmation bias. Yeah. It sounds like what you're talking about.
Exactly.
And I think we are in the worst possible state of confirmation bias.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Everyone is in their own bubbles. Like on, you know, you're on Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is, you're only going to hear stuff from people that agree with you for the most part. And it's going to feed that to us. YouTube, it knows what we like. It knows we like Trump, or it knows we like anti-Trump, and it gives us more of that.
Right.
And it just confirms, yep, see, I was right.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree. I think listening has become a lost art.
It definitely. As,
and debating has definitely, I don't know if it was always like this, though. Maybe this is.
I'm going to tell you it wasn't. I'm going to tell you why I know it wasn't. When I was a hippie back in the day, and we were doing our things, and it was the 70s, one of the things, now granted, this is fueled by a lot of weed, okay?
Right.
But people sat down, and they and this is where the word comes from, and they, I would literally, if I just met you and say we shared a joint or something, hey, man, you want to rap?
Huh. And we that meant like get to know each other.
Yeah, and that meant to sit down and, and tell each other what we're about.
Okay.
And you, most people don't really. I mean, I see a lot of things about the 70s and the 60s, but one of the things I don't see people talk about is rap sessions, and that's what we called them. Huh. We sat down and we had rap sessions. So, and we were allowed to disagree, and we were, but there was a certain decorum. Where people actually listen to each other, and you know what? I actually learned some things.
Right.
You know, so,
right.
But I think that's just so not visible anymore.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to, you know, they just want affirmation.
Yeah. Well, I know in my case, it's also, and maybe this is a symptom of having discussions online. That where people just kind of all the manners go out the window, like especially with strangers,
right.
Like people are just going to say whatever the hell they want. Not just strangers, but people, you know, I hadn't seen in 30 years, but we were friends on, you know, we didn't really know each other for the last 30 years, but now we can communicate. But it's just like, yeah, it might be, I'm wondering if it's, you know, people are so nasty online to each other, that especially younger people are afraid to bring up politics or subjects that are contentious,
yeah.
Because they don't want that in-person tension.
Well, it's that, you know, it's like anything else. If you don't practice, and I go back to the rap sessions, if you don't practice discourse, if you don't, if it's not part of who you are, you literally don't know how to do it.
Right.
You know, and I
mean, typing doesn't count.
No, it really doesn't. And you know, we all have the stories of, you know, going into restaurants. And I can't remember where it was. My significant other and I were eating out there, and there were eight kids. Oh, it was they had just played in it was in the Chipotle, and they had just played a baseball tournament. Now, I don't know who won or lost because they weren't talking about it. What they were is not one of them was talking to each other. Now, these are teammates, and they weren't talking to each other. They were all on their phones, every one of them. Not one word was being, you know, so
yeah.
I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong. What I'm saying is, though, we do, you know, conversation comes the great ideas,
right?
You know,
and back and forth.
The discourse is important, and I truly wish that in education we would actually put more of an emphasis on critical thinking, but also critical exchange of ideas.
Right.
You know, and we just don't. Everything is, you know, again, it goes back to the narrative. The narrative in education, and I won't. I mean, I could talk, we could have a 10-hour session right now, but everything is backwards designed off of testing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how we're measured. We're measured by testing. So everything we do has to have that as the goal. And as a consequence, there's nobody actually learning from each other. You know, the, and I know this is stereotypes and I'm kind of rambling a bit, but you know, the, for years, like I said, this is somewhat of a stereotype, but it also kind of has a, kind of speaks to the cultures. The Swedes were very utilitarian. Mm-hmm. You know, they became known for the Volvos and the, I think the Saabs and
right.
I mean, these were cars that, you know, they looked okay, but they were
practical.
They got you through.
Practical, yeah.
Yeah, and then you had the Germans, who were all about precision. Mm-hmm. The BMWs, the Mercedes, the,
right.
you know, and performance and stuff like that.
Right.
And excuse me, people in England, but the UK was, this is probably not fair to them, but it was more about pretentious.
Style.
Yeah, and style. Yeah, there you go.
Aston
Thank
Martin.
You. Thank you.
I mean, yeah.
British Leyland products were Jaguars, you know.
Right. Those
kinds of, now, anybody that knows anything about cars knows that those cars are great when they work right, but they rarely work right.
They rarely work right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so.
What about the U.S.? What was that?
Well, up until recently, and this is where I think we're going to get into trouble.
Yeah.
We're about innovation.
Okay.
You know, we're about, you know, we're about inventing things.
Okay.
In Japan, for instance, they take those ideas and they replicate them in a mass way.
Right.
Let's talk about the Japanese automakers, and I use those only as a frame of reference.
Right.
You know, but they, that's how they got their share of the market, was taking our ideas and replicating them for a cheaper price.
Right. Right.
And a more efficient
right.
price. So we've always been, you know, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that we chose as a country to, in the colonial times, we just had to figure it out.
Right.
You know, it was just that way. We were living on basically an island,
island. We had to innovate.
We had to.
There was no instruction.
We had
manual.
To, and we became very good at it.
Yeah.
And so the entrepreneurial spirit really thrived.
Right.
And that's what built this country.
Right.
You know, and you know, the old industrialists and those kind of things, you know, they figured out how to do that. So, you know, but I worry about us losing that entrepreneurial, critical mm-hmm. thinking kind of motif, because I just think that we've gotten lazy as a country.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, and we've also, in getting our, you know, most of our cars are, it seems like most of our cars we buy from foreign companies. Like the U.S. auto market is not leading the charge exactly.
Right.
So right now there's a, not just in automotive, but there seems like a big movement to bring everything back to the U.S., bring manufacturing back, which I'm all for. But it seems like what we're trying to do is first eliminate the cars coming in, or at least make them way too expensive, and before we're building the infrastructure to meet the demand. Like we could build an amazing car in the U.S. I have no doubt about that, but I'm thinking, shouldn't we build that car first, get the factories set up and create, have the demand there before we take away our other options?
It's kind of almost like in order to, for us to make ourselves feel good, because we are the most powerful country in the world, and simply because we have more money as a country than anybody else, and we're basically, I think, in a lot of respects, in our policies, are the bullies of the earth. You know, when it comes to our you know, our policies, these excess tariffs, which is what you're talking about, you know, thinking that somehow if we charge these excess tariffs, we're going to have time to do that stuff. But the lag time that it's going to take to build that infrastructure and actually have an effect is, I think it's insurmountable, because I don't think we have the patience to see it through.
Well, not to mention, it seems to me like the economy is going to take a big dip So people are going to be even tighter with their money and not invest in these new markets or in these, you know, industrialization, we'll just call it, bringing those jobs back to America. That requires investment, big investment. And if our economy's not doing well, I don't know. I'm getting a little out of my league here in terms of investments and what it takes.
We're not out of our league. Some of the shit's common sense.
It seems like it.
You know, everybody thinks that just because somebody has money that they're smart, and if they don't have money, they're not smart.
Right.
It's just not true.
But that's the culture that leads this country, right?
Right.
It has been since the 80s. Right. I mean, I saw it black and white, and I'm sure you've seen it too.
Yep,
you talk to people on a golf course.
I've been.
And they just bow down to whoever's got the money.
Right.
Oh, he was a smart man. He invested in that, and then he got this, that, and the other. It's like, yeah, if you've got that kind of money to invest, it's an impressive thing to make the right decision with it, but I don't know if that necessarily makes you a smart person.
Well, it may make you smart, but it certainly doesn't make you wise.
Right.
We got very lucky as a country. Okay, we didn't want to, you know, the settlers didn't want to practice the same religion. So we all came over here. The Native Americans had no concept of land ownership. That was a purely European concept. And we introduced that to them in a very harsh way.
Yeah.
You know, we took their land.
Yeah, their understanding was we belong to the land.
Correct.
And nobody
owns the land.
So we took a handful of, the Chase family took a handful of marbles and bought the island of Manhattan from the Indians.
Which, by the way, from a Native American standpoint, that was a pretty good deal because you guys, for 20, I think it was $27, it was some ridiculous amount. And they thought, well, you're giving us $27 for something you can't even own, you know, because so it wasn't a bad
deal.
There's
no owning this land.
Yeah. So it was just, so anyways, we build our economy based on, conquering that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And slave labor.
And slavery, yeah.
You know, and those kind of things. And then all of a sudden, where we were geographically, we were protected. We're protected on the west by the Pacific and the east, there was a reason we were able to defeat the British Army. They didn't, you think those guys wanted to get on the ships and come over
Hell
here?
No.
Hell have no. Anything to do with that? But anyways, so we got very fortunate.
Right.
You know, and our country's full of natural resources.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, we were, and now, did we take advantage of them? Did we do some things? And were there some good, really good things? Yes. But I think you have to have some humility and understand how fortunate we are as a country to be in the situation that we're in. And that's, it doesn't bother the Europeans, I don't think, so much in the other people of the world, that we are so rich.
It's no, it bothers them when we impose it on the rest of the world.
In our arrogance.
Yeah.
Our arrogance, yes.
I learned a lot. I went to Boston University, and there was a lot of huge international student body there. And I became good friends with a lot of Europeans and Middle Easterners. And, you know, it's from our perspective, they show on the television set, you know, tens of thousands of peoples burning American flags in Iran, and this, and over the years we think, okay, they hate us, but we never ask why. And it's not they hate us; it's a portion of that country, it's a population. There were the biggest candlelight vigil for 9/11 victims was in Iran, so it's not. It's a misperception, but we're fed that from the media. No media, they're not going to go cover people loving America. I don't think they have big holidays and parties for it either necessarily. But what I never knew was why. And that's what I learned a little bit of over the years. And I only got the tip of the iceberg. But, you know, basically coming in, setting up factories. Oh, we're creating jobs in your country. But it's like 1910 in America type jobs.
Yeah.
You know, slave labor.
Right.
And you know, they're in desperate situations. They're going to take the jobs, of course. But then we start imposing, okay, if you want our business, you want our factories, you want us to create jobs, you have to do things our way. You have to play nice with us on these other fronts. And it becomes bullying, basically. Yeah.
And I don't get me wrong, I don't think there's anything wrong with using leverage. I mean, we are a capitalistic society.
Sure.
Excuse me, I have to cough. But I don't think it, I just think if it was tempered so much about if we were better caretakers, if we're going to be, if we are going to be who we are and we are going to be great, part of that is being a good citizen.
Yeah, we're guests in their country, yeah. No matter how we slice it.
Well, and citizens of the planet as well.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And understanding how fortunate. And the other thing that they don't get, and I kind of learned when we went over to Bosnia, is they we're 250 years old,
mm-hmm.
as a country.
We're nothing.
250
babies.
Years.
We're babies.
I know, and that's when I do digress, because that's what we do on this podcast is we're digressing. But that's where I think we're going to run out. I think we're living on borrowed time. We're living on our laurels,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think there's going to be a true come to Jesus moment for our country, and I don't think we're equipped to handle it. I don't think we're equipped emotionally, intellectually, in any sort of way to handle that, you know. And in fact, it's coming in increments now, and that's why the, you know, and I hate to pick on the MAGA movement, but Make America Great Again. Well, Make America Great Again. Let's talk about who America has never been great for.
Right.
It's never been great for women.
Right.
It's never been great for any ethnic minorities.
Right.
It's been great, and I am one.
Yeah.
For the Caucasian white guy, you know, and I'm not sure it was all that great even then.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. too. There's no point in American history you can point to and say that, yeah, we had equal rights back then and everyone was treated fairly. There's no point. You can say it was more fair than this or that country. You can say it was better than this or that country. We can't say it was great for all of the people in America. I fully agree. But it's interesting, I think, when asked, when was America great again? Every interview I've seen to this effect, it was in the 50s, after World War II. And you know what I'm going to say next.
No, go. Go.
My understanding is we were paying roughly an up to a 90% tax rate back then in the 50s. I don't know what the breakdown was. That might have been for people. I'm sure that was for people earning over a certain amount. Our taxes were definitely a lot higher. So the same people saying making America great again, lower taxes, aren't making any sense to me.
Well, okay.
I'm not advocating for higher taxes. I'm just saying there's a reason we invested a lot in our infrastructure back then. We invested a lot. People could buy a two-family house and just one person holding a job. But yeah, taxes were a part of the picture.
You know, let's talk about this. And I'm going to have to speak in generalities because, again, everything is, you know, we could again take each one of these sentences and turn a whole, you know, podcast
about it. Yeah. Right. And that might be.
Well, that's what we're doing. We're opening up the line now for all these topics.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, but, you know, first of all, let's talk about Germany and Japan.
Okay.
Germany and Japan were together going to try to take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was, and we did not get involved. We remained neutral as long as we could. And you know why we remained neutral as long as we could? Because we were selling to both sides.
Right.
You know,
we were selling them arms.
Yeah, our manufacturing. So we were enjoying the benefits of that.
Right.
It wasn't until Pearl Harbor that we could no longer capitulate.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, and remain neutral. So we get into this situation, and we end up, with the help of Russia, going with a lot of help from Russia. We were able to defeat them, and as a consequence, we had no competition on the world stage. Our infrastructure was set.
Right.
Our ability was set, and we were able to reap the benefits of being the most industrialized country in the world.
Right.
And having that, we were able to just sell everything, and we just became filthy rich. So the idea, the 50s were probably, I mean, again, for the mainstream America, mm-hmm. Was probably the most influential.
I'm trying to think of the words. Fortunate.
Fortunate. Well, whatever. But we had a lot of freaking money.
Right.
Okay. And and all this being said, I still think we're the greatest country in the world, but we have to look at ourselves and see our flaws, or else how are we going to get better?
Yeah.
You know, and again, this education thing, we're going to spend a lot of time on it. But the one thing I'm going to say is simply this. We've got to get rid of standardized testing, period.
Let's
end of discussion.
I guess not.
we don't have the time right now.
Okay.
Okay, and it's a big thing. I will tell you this, that Finland is pretty much regarded as having the best educational system in the world, and that's a pretty much a consensus.
Okay.
Okay. And they do certain things in Finland. And this is what this goes to the arrogance. Okay. You know, America spends more money per pupil than any country in the world.
And gets,
it gets less than probably the top, I think they're 13, 14, 15. We're top 15.
It's almost as bad as healthcare, what we spend versus what we get.
It's the same thing. It's just excess. And one of the things they do in Finland is they don't have standardized tests. And they don't have, you know, I don't know how old you are, but back in the day when you had the kids with disabilities, and I'm not talking about the extreme disabilities where they couldn't walk or anything like that. I'm talking about the kids that I think they called them special ed back then.
Yeah.
The special ed kid, there's no such thing.
Right.
In Finland.
No,
it's all mainstream unless it's extreme.
Okay.
And the theory is, and it's true, that you're going to learn just as much as a child teaching a kid with a disability and in return, that kid with a disability has a gift in something else that's going to teach you something about yourself, and we hold each other up. Mm. And so there is no special education, and there is no standardized testing. So why do we insist on making everything based on standardized testing?
Well, it's a good question. When you say standardized testing, what is the alternative? Like, do they
no testing?
No testing at
None.
All. How do you measure whether they're learning?
No. I'm talking about. I'm talking about standardized testing.
Define that for us.
So standardized testing is taking one test
for everyone.
For everyone.
Right.
That's standard. Okay. And for instance, we have a big reading problem in this country.
Yeah.
Kids cannot read.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Everybody knows it. Everybody says it. Everybody wipes their brows and says, oh, what are we going to do?
Right.
And we do nothing. You know, the federal government, and this is where I kind of converge with our current president.
Okay.
The federal government, and I'm within percentage points, okay, provides about 10 to 12% of the funding for education.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's fairly close. Whatever, it's not a majority. Most of the money comes from local money, the taxes. Some of it comes from the states. So if you take your three levels of government, federal,
mm-hmm.
local, and state, and the local is providing most of it, and the state. So if you're trying to teach a kid to read, why would you teach a kid in Florida, and this is just an example of what I know because I've experienced it. There's a story out there called the Triangle Factory Fire. Okay, it's a kind of the go-to story for kids to understand how to write and read and everything else. And it's simply, and I can't remember, I don't remember the whole story, but it's about a fire that occurred in New York in a factory in the 20s and people got killed.
Okay.
Do you think a child in Florida is going to relate to that story?
No.
Okay. Do you think a kid in South Dakota is going to relate to that story?
No.
Do you think a kid in Florida might relate to maybe something about citrus or something about, you know, right. Those kind of things? And that's why I think we need to get, you know, education is getting kids to connect with something so they can relate to it, so they want to learn.
Right.
Okay. And we just don't do that. And that's done with curriculum. And the curriculum, certainly you have to assess. You have to test, but there's certain kinds of tests.
That was my question, is what is the alternative? Like, do you test different people at different levels? Like the tests are harder for some than others?
Or? No, I think you take the curriculum and you do your summative assessments and you do them based on, you know, what you're specifically teaching at that time. And you don't have to teach the same thing to every child.
Right.
I mean, I didn't say that right. You don't have to teach the same content and expect the child to remember the same content because he may remember certain parts of the story. In other words, allow them to give their version of the stuff.
Okay.
You know, and the other thing that happens, and then I'm going to end with this because we are getting kind of short on time.
Okay.
And there's a few things I want to say, and we're going to talk about this. The cheating that goes on is unreal.
Oh, yeah. I know people who have cheated their whole way through college.
And I'm talking about the cheating on the tests. You know, especially now with AI, you ask any kid, you ask any kid in school right now, I promise you, if you ask them during their standardized testing, do they have kids cheating with their, first of all, they're not supposed to have phones.
Right.
Okay. But a lot of kids have two phones. They turn in one phone.
And they have
the other phone. And they're going on AI and they're doing, they're copying and pasting, you know, not copying, but typing and they're getting to the question. And they're not remembering anything.
No.
You know?
Well, that's the thing. There's no memorization anymore. It's just, I mean, but I don't know. If the problem is that we're doing this standardized testing versus individual testing, we'll call it, or individualized?
No.
I don't know what to call it.
There's no. How about limited assessments?
Limited assessments. What do they do in Finland now?
I think I've got this right, at the end of high school,
yeah,
they... Or and I'd have to verify this because I'm not going to say something. I'm going to try not to say something I don't know. There's some sort of a overall assessment they use for placement, and they use it for whether you're going to be into a vocational path.
Kind of like in England, like they used to do, and I don't know if they still do, but it was you either went to art school or you went to a trade school or you went to Oxford.
Right, exactly. Right. But it delineates what your path can be. Oh, yeah. The other thing, guess how long the kids go to school?
In Finland?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
They go to school for 6.5 hours. Guess they spend 4 hours in the classroom a day.
Really?
2 hours of it is spent socializing.
That's what it should be.
Yeah, they're spent, and the other thing is, the teachers all have master's degrees, and they're paid very well, and you know, because they're valued,
right?
You know, so again, it's not that we don't have the money; it's how we allocate those dollars.
Well, we create charter schools, and that's where all the good teachers go, from what I can tell, and not all the kids get to go there.
Yeah, and then. You know,
but it's a Band-Aid, but I don't think it's the solution.
And the thing you have with charter schools, it's not the real world.
It's not.
You know,
yeah.
It's not. It's, You know, I don't think the charter schools are the answer. I think they're necessary because of the way our education's set up.
That's what I mean. It's a Band-Aid, but it's not the fix.
Right. I don't think that's the overall fix.
And honestly, if I had kids now, and they were in public, I might want to move them to a charter school because there's some terrible public schools in this country, everywhere.
And all, by the way, all public schools are not created equal. I know that the public school that my grandkids go to down in Fort Lauderdale, I've gone down there and spent enough time with them and seen it versus the school I taught at. It's like night and day. They're almost like on a college campus versus.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The environment is crazy good, you know.
Do you think are they in an area with like where the medium income is a little higher than.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
But it makes sense.
But again,
teachers.
Well, it's not only that. You know, I was on a committee early on, and it was the school I taught, the only school I taught in, and was a dean in, was 95% free and reduced lunch, which meant that 95% of the kids didn't pay for their lunch.
Okay.
Okay. And so they, and what we had there is we were probably, not probably, I know we were, because I know the numbers, we were 80% or 70 to 80% African American or Haitian American or some variation. And then we were maybe 20% Latino and about 10% Caucasian. And so they had this big initiative, and you see it everywhere. Why are there disproportionate amount of young black men being suspended? Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk demographics, which is where you started this conversation with.
Okay.
Let's talk demographics. Well, maybe because 80% of our population is that.
Right.
And maybe because a lot of a high percentage of them are from very, very poor backgrounds.
Broken homes, yeah.
So if you want to have a conversation on opportunity and civil rights and everything else, we can have that conversation about economic opportunity and things like that.
Right.
But don't just sit there and blame the teachers because they're spending more black kids. Well, of course they are. You know, there's less parent involvement, there's less money, and there's less parent.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
In those situations.
And they're acting out.
But you have to ask yourself why, though.
Right.
Okay. It's just to say, oh, let's just throw them to the curb and leave it at that. That's right. Not a solution. The solution is, if you want to truly know, then you got to be part of that solution and you know, have again a discourse on why it is that way.
Right.
And it's been that way for forever. I mean, there's prejudice everywhere you look. You know,
right.
It just some people. You know, veil it better than others.
Sure, sure. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. And the thing now is, and I touched on this, and we probably won't have time to get into it now, but it seems like we're really misplacing our priorities right now in terms of how we're going about fixing the education system. Again, you know, they're going through and removing this book that has a character that people are nice to and is gay. And we have to get that book out of the schools. That's where all our efforts are going right now, is taking stuff out of classroom literature that encourages kids to be nice, not just to their own kind, but to everyone.
Well, see, that goes to critical thinking. You know, that goes to, you know, not one size fits all.
Right.
You know, and so why should, and that's what we do with the standardized, you're kind of making my point for me. That's what standardized testing does. It's just a linear progression, the same thing.
Right.
You know, you're 100% right. I mean, if certain people had their way, Huckleberry Finn would be, you know, because you got Jim in there and you got, Huck, who's, you know, and I think the N-word might even be in there.
I think so.
You know, yeah. So let's get that, you know. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I know that your big thing is, and I hate to switch right now because I'm going to kind of introduce it for our next time. Your big thing is, and it's going to be something that we're going to start on, is music. That's your love. That's your passion.
That's definitely one of them. Yeah. Probably my biggest. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not?
No, it's probably my biggest. Yeah. It is my biggest passion, I'm sure.
I'm going to tell you that it's not mine.
Okay. I know.
and there's reasons for it. I think the nuns used to have this little thing that where you learn the scales on do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, di, do. And I can remember this, Sister Kathleen Marie, I can remember her like it was yesterday, trying to teach me the scale, and she just gave up. She just walked away and said, this ain't going to happen. So the next move for me was that we, you know, everybody's in the choir because you don't have any choice, because the kids have to all sing because you go to Mass every day in a Catholic school.
Okay.
You have to sing. I had to move my lips.
Right.
Because I couldn't carry. I still can't. I can't carry a tune.
Well, I'm into music, and I play music, as you know, and that's always been a huge thing. But I'm also a nerd, a total nerd, with just about listening and bands and artists and learning about that and so on. We can talk about that anytime, of course. I'm sure it'll be woven in and out of all.
I know we were all over the place. We had to. This is our trial, so if anybody's listening to this, please don't judge us. Okay? Actually, you can, because you know what? I don't give a shit.
You're gonna anyway. Yeah, there's nothing we can do about that.
Yeah, it is what it is. Yeah. Let's go ahead and end this now, and then maybe we can. Look at starting off with music on our next podcast.
Okay.
And starting that, and then we'll probably end up on at the bottom of the ocean talking about oceanography somewhere along the line.
We could. You know, so.